This is Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow. And in just a few days, Charles Darwin turns 200. And it's actually a double anniversary because this year also marks 150 years since the publication of On the Origin of Species. So this hour, we're going to be saluting Charles Darwin. And we have a selection of stories of animal evolution that I know you're going to be talking about at the dinner table tonight or over a good glass of Merlot, because these are really unusual evolutionary stories. I want you to listen to them. And then finally, as a bonus, we're going to top it off with an interview with Darwin's great-great-grandson. So a lot of Darwin to talk about this hour. And that is the writer and director, Matthew Chapman, who's going to talk about Darwin's legacy. But up first, the first of these really interesting evolutionary stories, and it is the world's biggest snake. Scientists were, this is interesting, they were investigating a coal mine in Colombia, South America, when they unearthed the fossilized remains of ancient snakes. And when they examined the fossil remains, and there were a lot of them, 28 piles of snake bones found, and they put the pieces together, they had realized that they had stumbled on a discovery worthy of Indiana Jones. There were snakes there that were as long as 40 feet, weighing 2,500 pounds. That's right, thousands of pounds of snake. And snakes just don't get that big anymore. I know you're probably thinking that's a good thing. And it is in more ways than one, because scientists who study snakes say the animals can only get that big, I mean, yellow school bus size, if there really is a really warm climate. And so that tells scientists something about evolution and the state of the planet in that period. And joining me more to talk about it is Jason Head, Assistant Professor of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology at the University of Toronto and Mississauga, Ontario. Excuse me. And he joins us by phone. Thanks for talking with us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Tell us about this snake. What kind of family would it be in?
Well, based on the anatomy of the vertebrae, of the backbones, my research group and I have figured out that this snake was most closely related to modern boa constrictors. And it was in the snake clade Boidae, which include the boas, the sand boas, the tree boas, rainbow boas, and anacondas.
So it's like that giant movie, Anaconda. This snake was much bigger.
Yeah, the movie Anaconda actually is a little smaller than our animal.
And this animal was really thousands of pounds.
We estimated for this for the new animal Titanoboa a maximum body length between 13 and 15 meters, or 42 to 49 feet, and a body mass of a mean body mass of about a ton and a quarter.
I'm glad you said a mean body mass.
Yeah.
If I were standing next to the snake,
mm-hmm.
how big would it come up to me?
Well, depending on your height, probably just somewhere between your knee and your hips. About somewhere between a half meter to three quarters of a meter, and maybe at our maximum size and weight estimate, up to a meter at its thickest point.
So it could come up to your waist, this snake.
That would be the upper end of our estimations, yeah.
Now, what would a snake this big eat?
Well, my colleagues found the snake in rocks that represent a depositional system that would consist of a large-scale river system and an associated rainforest. Very similar to today's modern Amazonian systems. Mm-hmm. And what they found the snake with were the remains of giant 2-meter-long aquatic turtles, some large-bodied fish, and a variety of primitive crocodilians. And based on ecological similarities that we infer with modern anacondas and the diversity and number of crocodilians, we think it was probably eating these primitive crocodilians.
So this snake was not around at the time of the dinosaurs?
No, the last extinction of the non-bird dinosaurs occurred about 66.5 million years ago, and the snake is from rocks dated between 58 and 60 million years.
And how many snakes did you find?
Well, the specimens were actually found by several of my colleagues, Jonathan Block and his students from the University of Florida, and Carlos Jaramillo from the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute. And they were down in the Cerrejón coal mine, and they have recovered now about 180 specimens of vertebrae and ribs that represent at least 28 individual snakes.
1-800-989-8255 is our number if you want to talk about these snakes. Now, how come we don't have snakes that big alive today?
Well, primarily, there's probably a couple reasons for that, but the main reason is probably climate. One of the things that we did with this snake is once it was realized that we were looking at what was clearly the world's largest snake, and once we backed out how big this animal really was, the one thing that struck us is that there must be a climate story in there somewhere. Just to have a cold-blooded animal that big in the equatorial regions of the neotropics at that age must tell us something about climate. So what we were able to do is we were actually able to take the known relationship between body size, metabolic rate, and ambient temperature in living cold-blooded vertebrates or animals today and actually derive that equation to figure out past temperatures based on the fossil snake.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of temperatures were you looking at?
Well, we got mean annual temperatures for the equatorial regions in the Paleocene of about 31 to 32 degrees C, and that's about 6 to 7 degrees warmer than the neotropics in the same latitudes today.
So you're talking in the 90s Fahrenheit.
Exactly. And that's the mean annual temperature. That's the average temperature.
And so for those snakes to survive, we had to have that kind of heat for them.
Exactly. So with cold-blooded animals like snakes, there is a critical minimum temperature under which an animal of a certain size can't survive. Mm-hmm. So the critical minimum temperature that you would need to sustain efficient metabolism in a 42 to 49 foot long snake would be basically 31 to 32 degrees C.
So as the earth, as the climate temperature there cooled off, that probably killed the snakes out.
Well, I don't think we have a sense really yet for the history of this group. We only have them from this one thin horizon of rock, and we don't know how long they persisted in the fossil record, and we don't know when they first evolved these large sizes, and we don't know when they went extinct or basically began to reduce their body size evolutionarily.
Mm-hmm. And why such a collection in one spot of dead snakes?
Well, it's the mine represents, again, this depositional environment. It represents a large-scale river system where you have basically water moving at some current in an environment that would have been full of vertebrate life and plant life, and basically you would have animals expiring and being entrained into the soft sediments at the bottom of the river, and over time you would just have a situation where you'd be accumulating a lot of dead material that would end up being preserved and fossilized.
Now, the kind of snakes you describe, the anacondas, that family, don't they constrict their prey? They wrap around them?
They do, and based on the relationships of this snake to other living boids, the most parsimonious assumption is to infer that, in fact, the snake was probably constricting as well.
It would need something big to constrict around for a 40-foot snake, would it not?
Well, it could wrap very easily around something 3 or 4 meters, say one of the largest primitive crocodiles, and be very good at constricting it very quickly.
So it's not just swallowing it, it's constricting at first. It's not,
right.
Yeah, and there probably were a lot of those crocodiles around there too. What was the swamp that is, I'm assuming it's a swamp sort of situation?
Probably actually a fairly wide-bodied river system, something like coastal plains with river systems cutting across the surface of them.
Could you now be tempted to look for more evidence of the snake now that you know it existed?
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of things a lot of material we haven't recovered yet. We don't have any remains of the skull. We could certainly find more individuals and more specimens. And so that's a very important site down at the Cerrejón coal mine, and it's really fertile ground for amazing new discoveries.
Could you look for more up closer to where we live?
Probably the expectation is that there would not be giant snakes up at the mid to high latitudes. We have some sense of their temperature during this time interval, and even though they're considerably warmer than it is today, the snakes from those latitudes are considerably smaller.
Mm-hmm. Let's see if I can get a quick phone call in. Anthony in Marinton, Arkansas. Hi.
Yes, sir. How are you?
Hi.
Yes, what I wanted to comment about was I've worked with aquatic turtles in Arkansas. I worked with Dr. Stan Troth from Arkansas State University looking at alligator snapping turtles, and I challenge students to go out and to look at big things that we have today, because big things are even fewer and far between in our day and time, whether they're big turtles or big trees or big crocodiles or big fish. Because in many cases, we've hunted things nearly to the point of extirpation in some cases. And just interested in the comments that he might have about, big snakes then versus big snakes now and what the future might be.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's been a lot of speculation about what the future might hold for giant snakes, given the relationship between snakes and climate that we've come up with in our analysis and some of the human-induced global warming that's going on today. I think probably in the near term, the future for giant snakes, especially in places like the Amazonian basin, isn't going to be great. Even though we're increasing temperatures globally, including at the equator, we're doing it at such a rate, it's probably faster than most vertebrate groups are going to be able to adapt. So we're basically changing the environment too fast for these systems to respond. and we're also reducing their habitat through deforestation and development.
The fact that this snake lived in such a warmer climate than today, does it say anything about the state of the planet in those days?
Well, I mean, it certainly was a very different climate globally than what we have today. I mean, this is during a globally warm interval where you have no ice at either pole. You have very high temperatures at the mid-latitudes and the high latitudes, and now we know there are very high temperatures at the equator as well.
Mm-hmm. So where do you go from here? Going back snake hunting? This is just sort of an Indiana Jones now, these giant snakes.
It's a pretty exciting time to be involved with this stuff, and we're hoping for more discoveries along the line.
And where would you be looking?
Basically, I'll go anywhere where there are fossil snakes. Certainly, the area where the Titanoboa specimens were found has a lot more to produce.
Are there any place to see these specimens yet? Can we see them on exhibit?
Not yet. They will be going on exhibit eventually in Bogota, Colombia. They're currently temporarily on loan.
Mm-hmm. And they'll be traveling around, perhaps?
Oh, I have no idea about that.
But you'll need to find some more then, so we can all, you know, see that reconstruction in the museum and get a good... You need a long piece of flooring to get that snake in.
I would love to see a reconstruction of one of these animals.
And anybody volunteer to do that for you yet?
Not yet, but things are progressing.
And how long ago was the discovery made?
The specimens, I believe, were found around 2 or 3 years ago originally. This is a tremendous area, and there's lots of fossils coming out of the ground. So lots of work is being done on many of the different animal groups and plant groups that are found there.
Well, Dr. Headwood, thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
And good luck. Good snake hunting to you.
Thanks very much.
Jason Head is Assistant Professor of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology at the University of Toronto in Mississauga, Ontario, in Canada. We're going to take a short break and then move on to the next evolutionary tale, and this one has to do with a caterpillar that can trick ants into thinking it's an ant and then getting the royal treatment that way. Isn't it a really interesting story? Just like if you thought snakes was interesting, wait till you hear this one. They're only getting better. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this break. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from NPR News.